Silence!
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
Listen to Play Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 251 of Nerd Pride Radio. 251, apparently that's some sort of chord progression, 251. It's a jazz thing. Apparently it indicates the end of a song or a phrase, or maybe just transition to something new. I don't know. I'm not a musician. But, therefore, according to Ronster, who gets it from Urban Dictionary, 251 can also mean to be chill, as taken from that jazz chord, because if you were a jazz person, you would say, "How's it going, Daddy-O?" I assume that's how they talk. And then the response would be, "Oh, you know me. It's all 251, baby." See? 251. If you trust Ronster and Urban Dictionary, and I do. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on. Ask me. I am awesome, but with a caveat that I'll get back to later. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus. There's like seven other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to have on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. As always, we're recording live from our Nerd Pride studios in the back of our Queen Family Truckster. All right. Quick, before we get to the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast, I will explain that caveat. As you know, I've been sick for the last three recordings, and let me tell you a story. Last night, I went to record, and so I went out and I posted up the listener betrayal, and I got all my show notes together, and just before I'm ready to start recording, all of a sudden, my stomach hurts so bad, I don't know what to do about it. I mean, like, it's one of those where it just feels like it's stomach cramps, and it feels like it's some ordinary digestion troubles, but it's one of those where it cramps up and hurts so bad that all you want to do is just lay there and moan. At least that's what I do, and I find the moaning actually helps a lot. It didn't in this case, but normally it would. And that lasted for many, many hours. And so I wound up not recording at all last night. I had the presence of mind after like an hour and a half, 2 hours, I had the presence of mind to shut off the listener betrayal and close it down. But I didn't actually record anything because it was just hurting. I'm not going to give you all the gory details, but I will tell you that, as all of this was starting and everything hurts, and I'm like, to me, I feel like the most bloated I have ever been in my life. I just felt like a stuffed sausage ready to burst. And so I decided to weigh myself. And it turns out that my weight wasn't all that high. I just feel really uncomfortable. But then, 8 hours later, after I have spent most of my evening in the bathroom, it turns out that I lost 7 pounds. That's just crazy. In 8 hours. And then I felt much better. So, the answer to the earlier question, because I was sick for the last three recordings, I had the lung stuff and the cough and cold and all of that. Yeah, that stuff's pretty well gone. I'm feeling really good. Had I actually been able to sit down and record last night, had I not all of a sudden just felt like I was going to throw up, if I had sat down to record last night and you had asked me, and I would have said, yeah, I think I'm done. I think I'm over it. I feel great. And then this, I don't know if it was food poisoning or stomach flu. Is stomach flu even a real thing? I don't know if it is. I don't know what it was, but it struck me out of nowhere, and now I stayed up all night with it, slept in this morning, like I've slept the whole day away, and I feel better. So Whatever that thing is, I'm a little achy, but that's going away. So, and I think completely unrelated to my earlier illnesses. So, yeah, all right, I should be good now, I think. But anyway, that explains why if I make some references now that are off from my normal time frame, I'm recording Monday afternoon at 2 o'clock instead of recording Sunday night at like 6 o'clock or whatever it was that I originally set up Listener Betrayal for. So, but I'll still use that Listener Betrayal if there's anything there. And I think there's a couple things. So now it's time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I add it to my master list, and the very best stuff off of that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. Straight into it. First up, it's my gaming table.
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die.
Role-playing games, video games, board games, card games, any games. If it fits on my gaming table, I am here to share it with you. And I hope I can do this justice. Let me tell you another story. So, about a month ago, we had a scout meeting. And we've decided that our scout meeting is going to go back to being a scout-led troop. That's what we decided. Because there's a scout-led troop, essentially, you assign the scouts themselves to put together the meetings and plan what activities we're going to be doing, and they do all the presentations, and they do all the work, and we, as adults, just give guidance and suggestions and whatever. And sometimes that works, but it's also, it's a lot more work, and so sometimes when things kind of, you know, life gets busy and things fall apart, we kind of go back to adults taking over a lot of the planning. And so, as a result of this, Noah had been tasked with finding an activity to use at our next scout meeting, which would have been yesterday. And we talked about it a little bit, and we came up with a perfect idea. I was like, hey, Noah, you know what? As much as you're into X, wouldn't it be awesome if we did something like this? He's like, oh my God, I could do that. I have all the stuff. I could, well, it came around to the meeting, and neither one of us could remember what that was. Still, for the life of us, cannot remember what the hell we were going to present. I mean, no clue what we had talked about. So, Noah and I sat down with, you know, 6 hours to go before the meeting. And so we sit down to start doing some research, figure out what it is we can put together. And then that way we've got, if, you know, if we have to run to the store and get materials or whatever, we'll have enough time to do all of that. And so we did a Google search for games for scouts, activities for scouts, blah, blah, blah. And we're not getting anything. I mean, there was like, you know, you can do a ping pong air hockey bit where you get a big table and you put a ping pong ball out there and then the two teams try and blow it off the other side and all that. I'm like, yeah, but we've done crap like that before. It's not all the stuff was either stuff we'd already done or it was for kids who were younger than our group. It was, and so I said, okay, how about, not just scouts, because that comes up with a lot of mixed stuff. What if we focus on trust-building activities? And so we did trust-building activities, and then we did trust-building activities for teens, and then that's when we finally hit on it. We found a game called Dragon Tower. And I don't know if this game goes by other names in other places, because whoever came up with Dragon Tower and gave us the description online, they were not very creative about naming. And so we altered a lot of the terminology in the game to make it a little more exciting for us. But here was the description, and it is, in Dragon Tower, you have a card, just a playing card. In our case, it was a Pokemon card, because that's what we had on hand. It was a Pokemon card with, I don't even remember which Pokemon it was, but it was the first female Pokemon we came across. And that is to represent your princess, because this is apparently a very stereotypical game. And the dragon has to go and hide the princess somewhere in the room. Alright? Now, there's now a team that has to find the princess. And the team is made up of the wizard, It's the jester, the wizard, and the knight. Alright? And the jester is the only one who saw where the dragon took the wizard. He was the only one in the room at the time that the card was being hidden. So he knows exactly where that card is hidden in the room. Now the other two come in, and the wizard has to explain to the knight where to go, but the knight is blindfolded. All right, so you have the jester. Oh, yeah. Did I mention the jester can't talk? So the jester is the only one who knows where it is, and he's not allowed to speak. The wizard can speak, but he doesn't get to move around. He just gets to sit there and interpret whatever the jester is gesturing at him. And then he explains it to the knight, who is blindfolded, who then has to go feel his way around the room to find where this card is hidden. Does that all make sense? Did I explain that well? Because that's how the game runs. And we had no idea what this was going to do. We had our little Pokemon card, and we had our basic rules. So you need a dragon to hide it, the jester who is our witness. The jester can't speak. He can only gesture to people. All right. So then the wizard has to interpret that so that the blindfolded knight can go find the card. Got it? Okay. We had no idea what we were going to get into. And as I'm looking over the room, it's just, all right, let me just jump straight to the end. Oh my God, it was awesome. Oh my God, we had so much fun playing this game. And I never even got to play. I just sat back and watched. I left the room a lot because I was going back up to where the adults were upstairs, but I would come down and check in on them just because it was so much fun to watch. These guys had such a blast. And the only thing I did was in the very first round, I went and hid the card because I thought, you know what, we should hide the card somewhere relatively easy. We've got this basement area where there's a whole kitchenette and there's cabinets and there's plenty of stuff to hide things in. But I'm like, you know, we don't want to make it too tough because this could be really hard and frustrating for people. And so I put it just somewhere simple, and they found it within a couple of minutes, and they had a blast. And so after that, but screw me and my whole idea of it needs to be simple. No. They started getting really clever and creative about stuff. It was like, okay, we have a roll of toilet paper. What if we put the card inside the middle of the roll of toilet paper and then hide the toilet paper inside the microwave? Okay, we'll do that. No, they found that in no time. It was easy. My favorite. Oh my God. They hid the little, like I said, the princess is just a Pokemon card. They hide the princess inside a deck of cards, like a whole deck of regular playing cards. They just put it inside the deck, inside the box, closed up the box, and then hid that somewhere. And so they go through this whole thing, and this kid finally finds where the deck of cards is, and he pulls it out, and I mean, they're doing this through, the jester is just gesturing on what you need to do with all of this stuff. And he's like, finally the wizard goes, oh, I get it. It's inside the deck of cards. And the jester is nodding. It's inside the deck of cards. And so now the wizard, now that he knows it's in the deck, oh, good. Now he can walk him through it. He's like, all right. He guides the knight to take the deck back over to a table. Okay, great. Now I want you to open up that deck and I want you to just dump them all out on the table. Great. Now put your hands down. All right, great. Spread them out. Good, good, good. Now right finger out. Good. Now, a little to the left, a little to the left. Nope, more. Now down. Now drop it. Boom. Yep, that's your card. Go. I mean, they were so clever and so, it was so much fun. And as we rotated through, everybody got a chance to play every part. All right. Because everybody wanted to be the dragon because they wanted to hide stuff. Everybody wanted to talk. Everybody wanted to gesture. Everybody wanted to be blindfolded. And so they all got chances to get every single role in. And just had so much fun doing it. And again, for the people who aren't playing at that particular moment, you have a great time just watching. It is hysterical to watch. And for me, since I never got to play any of the parts, because this was all for them, it took me a little bit to realize that, oh, yeah, how frustrating is that? That you know exactly where it is, but you can't talk. And they're not listening. And it's like, no, turn to the left. No, turn. No, more. Oh, stop. All right. Back the other way. And you're trying with gestures to indicate when they're actually in the right direction. So that anyway, it was just so much fun. And so I highly recommend this game, Dragon Tower. I highly recommend doing this. All you need is a card. Open up a deck of cards and pull out a queen and there's your princess, or pull out a jack and make it a prince if you're not into traditional sex roles. I don't care, gender roles. It doesn't make any difference. The whole point is, you've got to get the blindfolded guy to find the card. That's all. And so now, after it was all over, they had so many ideas for what to do with it next time. Because one thing that we think we're going to start doing is next time we play, we're going to time it. I mean, this time it was just for fun. Everyone was just goofing around. But next time we're going to time it and And I think having a timer will stop people from just jerking around with the blindfolded dude. Because there was one where one of the kids, his brother is the one blindfolded, and so he's just intentionally spinning the kid around and telling him to walk in here and now over there, and he's like taking him completely away from where the card is just so he'll bump into chairs and stuff. And which is, you know, funny for a moment, but yeah, he dragged it out about 10 minutes, and still, everyone was having a good time, but if we threw a timer on it, it would stop people from doing stuff like that. It would get them more to the point. Oh my god, there was one time, they had a kitchen cupboard that Noah was the dragon, so Noah just crawled inside the kitchen cupboard and just held the card in there. Alright? Brilliant. So now, they're guiding the knight, and here comes this poor knight, this hapless knight, coming along. Finally, they got him to the right cabinet, and they have him open the cupboard, and he reaches his hand into the cupboard and puts his hand on Noah, who goes, "Hello there." And this kid just jumps out of his freaking skin, stumbles backwards into the table. And I gotta tell you, this was a kid who sometimes doesn't take teasing all that well. But his reaction was just brilliant. Everyone was able to laugh at themselves. Everyone was able to just play along and have fun and recognize that this is just a good time. This was, when you want to talk about an exercise for, I mean, again, it says exercise for teens, and it was specifically designed for building communication skills and building trust. And I, just with the dynamic of our scout group, and we've got some older scouts and we've got some younger scouts, and over the past year or so, there's been some friction between the two groups. And usually when they get to activities, they divide up into older scouts over there, younger scouts over there, and they each do their own thing. And this time, it was, everybody was just together. It was just all, and I mean, maybe it's just because this is a really good game, and this doesn't necessarily signal anything special for the scouts, but maybe it does. And it was wonderful. It was so much fun. So, there. You don't need anything but a card and at least four people. That's it. That's all you need. And in fact, technically, you could even get away with doing this with just three people if you want to have the jester go hide the card himself and then guide the other two on where to find the card that he just hid. But it's a lot... Hold on, I'm going to have to answer that, right? And I'm back. Sorry, that was Tatiana with North Country Windows, wondering if we had received their holiday flyer. So I very politely got rid of her. Anyway, you could do it with three people, but man, there is something about getting to being the dragon and thinking that you're finding the best place to hide this card and making it super challenging for the jester. So it best with four. All right. But there's also, we've also thought about doing double teams, so have the dragon hide two cards, one for each jester, and then each jester has his own wizard and knight, and then at the same time in the same room, the two wizards are trying to each guide their own knight to their own princess, and thus you have people talking over each other and make it a race. I personally think we would love to try that one. We are going to do this at our family holiday Christmas thing when we get all the cousins together out at my in-laws' place. We're absolutely going to try it. The kids already said, "Oh, we have to do this at Christmas. We have to." And I'm like, "Yeah, of course we have to do it at Christmas. Why wouldn't we?" And then when we came back and we were all excited and explained it to my wife on how awesome it was, she's like, "Well, is there any way we could play this at Christmas?" We're like, "Yes, of course we're going to play this at Christmas." So, it's really that much fun. I almost feel like I'm talking it up too much, but it is such a simple concept. And now, again, you know, we got these basic rules and we've already figured out that, yeah, we're going to need to put some kind of timer on it that will help with some of the jerking around that goes on, that maybe there's other variations on it that work. You also have to be careful because with these kids, I'm trying to explain to them that, look, this is a scout event and we're scouts. And so therefore, I can't have you sending blindfolded scouts to climb up on things to go find that card. It has to, they're gonna have to be able to reach it with their feet on the floor. Well, can we have them stand on a chair? No, technically standing on a chair is the inappropriate way to reach high places. You're supposed to have a stepladder or stool. You're supposed to have someone holding it. You're certainly not supposed to be blindfolded. So, God, yeah, we can't really have them climbing things. There was also, some stuff like, okay, now, walk this way. All right. Nope, go forward a little bit more. Okay, that's your brother right in front of you. Give him a hug. All right, good. Now move him to the side, and I keep going. And I'm like, okay, guys, some of that is funny, but again, at a scout event or at any event, some people are not all that cool with the touching and the physical contact. We gotta roll back on that a little bit. It's not relevant to finding the princess, therefore, come on. Some of those concerns are modified different, less important when it's going to be all family and all people who know each other really well, and it's not a scout-sponsored event. So we'll see how that goes. And then we're also still going to do it when we have our game night lock-in with the scouts coming up. They were so excited. I'm so excited. It's a great game. Okay. Whew, I think I've told my whole story. So it is time to move on to... Oh, that's it.
And now for something completely different.
That's right, something completely different. It's just things I don't have a category for yet. This is the Rat King. Have you ever seen a picture of a Rat King? Not like, is there a Rat King in Nutcracker Suite? Okay, because it's not that. It's like the actual mythical beast, the Rat King, that when I stumbled across this imagery, I was like, well, I know what's being added to my nightmares this week. Apparently, a Rat King is two or more rats who have lived in such close proximity that through injury and garbage and other stuff matting to them, their tails get knotted together, and thus you have a mass of rats all joined together by the tail, and there are pictures of Rat Kings that have been found in the past. There are x-rays of these Rat Kings, x-rays of their tail knots, and doctors, experts who will speak about how you can see where the tails have been broken and rebroken in this knot, and thus they were still alive when this happened, and things all kind of healed together in this grisly mass of rat bodies all tied together and struggling one over the other, and it's just gruesome. All right. I mean, it's just literally the stuff of nightmares. And now when I look it up, it turns out that these masses of rats, I mean, and they've got pictures of where it's, like five or seven rats all together, that probably, the vast majority, if not all of these Rat King examples from the past, have been, completely fictional, that these are, sideshow items that people have put together, pasted together, and then presented these gruesome dead bodies as if they were a real thing once upon a time. So most of them are probably fake, but I didn't get that information when I first saw them. All I saw is this was presented as fact, and like I had this moment of instant revulsion, and it's accompanied by a link to a YouTube video where there's two. It's a Rat King that's just two rats whose tails are clearly bonded together with some kind of I don't know, it was just a lump of matted fur and dirt and mud. And so their tails were stuck together, and they clearly were not coming apart. And it looked very much as if this happened naturally to the two of them. And so one rat is dragging the other rat around. And then the other rat finally gets his footing as he drags this guy. They were about evenly matched. And so it was a Rat King that was just two rats, and it was a real thing crawling around the edges of a dump. And so so that can happen. But, three, four, five, 12, how does that even come about? I can see how the first two or three, might get stuck together accidentally nesting in the same place, but then how do more get added to it all at once? That's just weird. Anyway, it's the Rat King. And like I say, I had that moment of instant revulsion and that, oh my God, I can't, holy crap. What this, it was just, like I say, stuff of nightmares. And then, obviously, I'm not going to take it at face value. I went and looked into it, and I did some reading, and I realized, oh. Okay, probably most of these are fictional. Oh, thank God. Okay. It was just interesting, and I was just surprised that I've never heard of a Rat King in this sort of way. I presented it to Yancey at work, and he's like, oh, yeah, I've heard of him. I think they're all made up. I mean, like, he's heard of it before. Aiden, who somehow is into weirder monster mythology than I am, he had heard of the Rat King in the past, and knew what I was talking about. So, you know, a lot of you probably already know this. But for me, this week was the first time I have ever seen this ever. Weird. So, creeped me out. And so I share it with you because I can't be creeped out by myself. All right. Next up, it is the Unnamed History segment.
Don't know much about history.
Okay, this is a great one. This was presented to me. The question was, what actor or actress has been in the most Oscar-nominated films ever? I'll let you think about it for a little bit, and you can come up with all sorts of wonderful suggestions for this category. But who has appeared in more Oscar-nominated films than any other performer? And it turns out the answer is Bess Flowers. And if you know who Bess Flower, her last name is not plural. And if you know who Bess Flower is already without me telling you, you are one lucky dog, because she's awesome. Bess Flower appeared in something like 25 different Oscar-nominated films, and over the course of 40 years, from 1923 to 1965, this woman appeared in almost 1,000 TV shows and movies. That's 25 gigs per year on average for 40 straight years. And when you look down her list of credits, it is guest at party, guest at nightclub, opera patron. She is always just a background character because her title is Bess Flower, Queen of the Dress Extras. That's her title. She is Queen of the Dress Extras, because when you're making a movie and you need a crowd scene, you need a bunch of extras for it. And the best extras that you can get are the dress extras. These are the ones who already have their own clothes. These are the ones that are, that they dress themselves, and then they appear on set, and you don't have to do anything with them except place them in the scene, because they already own the clothes you need for this scene, and they know how to get ready for it. They know how to prepare for whatever piece you've got. And they're there, and that was Bess Flower. Bess Flower was a clothes horse. She loved fashion, and she loved being unique, and she early on got in with certain designers who would create clothes for her because they knew she was appearing in lots of films. And so it was kind of this self-perpetuating thing where she just showed up for stuff, and they would put her in these movies. Like, if Bess Flower is there, she's going to be there. And when you watch these movies, you'll recognize her from some, you'll go, oh, her, like she's that platinum blonde from, several Three Stooges shorts. She's been in, a ton of Alfred Hitchcock stuff. Alfred Hitchcock is one, there were several directors who would ask for her by name. When they're looking for extras for a scene, they would ask for her by name, and she would occasionally get a line. And usually the line is just as the main characters of the film happen to be passing by that area, and she would ask about, well, I haven't seen you since the whatever last week. And that's it. That's her whole line. And that's it. That's all she does for that movie. And that's amazing to me. Absolutely amazing. Like, all right, and this is a quote from her. Her quote is, I made a good living. I'm lazy from the South, so I never took anything that was hard. I was always good to Bess. Damn right she was. That was for her. It was, she gets the clothes. And she gets to make movies, she gets to be in movies, and she has more than enough money to support herself her entire life. That's all she needed. That's all she wanted. She lived a good life, she hung around with famous people, and she was fun. And I'm just very impressed with her. And so I'm telling this story to Aiden, because I always try out my podcast bits on family and friends before I bring them here. So I'm trying this out on Aiden, and he's like, so there's people who actually are like huge fans of Bess Flower, and they like follow her work, and they like, how sad is that? I'm like, no, imagine watching old movies from that time period, anything from the 20s to the 60s, and watching these movies, and then you spot her in the background, and like at screenings of old films, there will often be a small contingent of people who know Bess Flower. And so when she appears on screen, you'll get this smattering of applause and yells as people point her out. And Aiden's like, what, dorks? I'm like, no, no, it's not dorks. Think about how excited you are every time you spot a Wilhelm scream in a movie. Because I still, my mind does not register Wilhelm scream until after someone points out. I'm like, oh, yeah, it was. How about that? But Aiden and Noah, they are dead on with that. They, every time we're watching a movie and there's a Wilhelm scream, it's like, oh, Wilhelm scream. I'm like, oh, you're right. Or anytime, the name of the movie, the title of the movie is mentioned in dialogue in the movie, Aiden will always go, oh, there it was. And I'm like, yeah, it's like those moments, except that now it's, oh, Bess Flower. Woo. So, I just thought it was super cool. I really like Bess Flower. Just completely charmed by this woman's career. I think that is amazing. So, let's see. What else? Oh, all right. I'm not going to do a full segment on this. I'm not going to do any kind of segment on this. But I am going to say that since I was sick this morning, I woke up with my family after a fitful hour of sleep. And they got out the door to school. And then I had to wait around because I was supposed to... They're doing some new wiring, and I'm supposed to be there to make sure everything connects and all the machines work. And I'm not going to be able to do it, so I had to double-check the details and find someone to cover for me today. And while I'm waiting, because it's going to take a while I'm waiting, I watched Logan. And I love Logan. Wow, that was a good movie. Which, look, you've all seen it, and you already know that. But what a great film. And maybe it's just because I'm completely sleep deprived and I'm an old softy, but there were some scenes in that movie that just brought tears to my eyes. And simple stuff. Like our band of good guys sits down to a normal meal with a family, and the banter that goes on and just the back and forth between the main characters. I'm feeling myself watering up. I'm like, oh, screw you, movie. How dare you? Don't do this to me. And it made me think about, cause last week I talked about the giant Smash Bros. Fanfic, the 4 million word fanfic that, Jacob had pointed me at. And here's the thing is that fanfic is not my gig. All right. That is not my thing. I can't imagine getting into it, which, oh, by the way, Jacob sent me a text not 20 minutes ago to let me know that my timeline's a little off. I said he's been doing this maybe for 15 years. Turns out he's been doing it probably no more than 10 or 11, writing that fanfic, because the beginning of it is based on Smash Bros. Brawl Ultimate. I don't remember which one he's... It's based on whichever one came out in 2008. So therefore, 10 years is the top. For how long this guy's been writing his 4 million words. But here's a bit, is that for that guy and for people who follow Smash Bros., I mean, to me, Smash Bros. Is nothing but a big fighting game. It is nothing but a big battle royale. You just throw all the characters on a screen, and then they flail at each other until there's only one left. It's not a complicated game, but there's a backstory to it, and there is... and there's an adventure mode to it that has a real story, and the people who play it give a crap about that story. And so, like, for Jacob, with the new Smash that just came out this weekend, Jacob was watching the ads for that, and he shared one of the early, trailers for it. And there's a scene in it where, I mean, to me, this is just comedy. Here's all of our Smash Bros. Characters all assembled, and oh no, the bad guys are coming. And the bad guys are coming in the form of a legion of Mr. Hands. And I don't know if you've ever played the early versions, but all I know is Mr. Hand is the big final boss guy, who is nearly impossible to kill. And so now here's this legion of Mr. Hands all charging at once, and whoever's shouting orders and being inspirational and saying, okay, if we divide up, we only have to take out 10 of them each. I have enough trouble just beating one Mr. Hand. You're now telling me everyone here has to take out 10 apiece? And as they're flashing through all the different characters lined up, I'm like, yeah, but that's the Wii Fit instructor doing a tree pose, and she's supposed to take out 10 of them? Seriously? I mean, villager from Animal Crossing, random villager is supposed to take out 10 of these. You go for it. So to me, this is just kind of funny. But there's a little scene in that where all the good guys are getting killed in the trailer. So they're all fleeing before this blast of light that disintegrates everybody, Infinity War style. And as they're running away, there's this one, I mean, really quick clip of Sonic and Pikachu running away together. All right. And Sonic is, of course, faster because he's Sonic the Hedgehog, and he's pulling out in front. But instead of just taking off and leaving, Sonic slows down and reaches back to Pikachu. He's going to slow down and help Pikachu so that they can both get out of there. And in doing so, both of them are completely consumed by this wave of light, and they both die. All right. Now, to me, I didn't even notice that in the trailer when I watched it. It had to be pointed out to me. Once it was pointed out to me, I'm like, oh, okay, I get it. All right, that's cool. But for Jacob, that was a, oh my God, tears in his eyes, openly crying at a video game trailer because the story means something to him. And to me, it's like, I'm jealous of that. I'm jealous that he has that connection with that property, which, you know, again, I have my own connections with my own stuff, and that's where Logan comes in today. I'm watching Logan, and there was something about these interactions that, look, you have to know who Caliban is before you go into it. I mean, you don't need to know that for the movie. I mean, the movie explains who he is, but I know who Caliban is. I've known who Caliban is since the 80s. I like that character a lot. You know, you have to know the full history of Logan and the professor and the school, and to watch their banter. There's more when I watch those little scenes and moments. I mean, yeah, they've got, you know, 7, 8, 10 movies to build on, but there's also 40 years of comic book history that they're building on, and I know all that. That's my fandom. And so, touched me. It was really sweet. So anyway, wow. I don't know. Maybe I'm just getting all misty because I'm sick. Who knows? But it was beautiful. I really liked Logan. Logan was a great movie. So that's it. That's all I've got. We're going to move right up into the Pod-O-Matic. Hot dog. This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring up R2, is fully pimped out, Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where these topics come from, you ask. Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums, and I'll add it to my Pod-O-Matic list, because Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. And thank you to Daz, thank you to Kyle, thank you to my wife, thank you to Ronster. I added in a whole bunch of Pod-O-Matics from people who sent new ones. I added in a bunch of Ronsters from his master list. So almost all of Ronsters are now in the main list, and he's over that third that I promised. But yeah, he's got some good stuff, and it all goes in well. So I now have a decent Pod-O-Matic list. I think I'm up to 100 and, let's find the exact number. There it is. All right. I told you last week I was also going to weed out some, because I had to go through, because I know that there's a lot of duplicate stuff that never gets eliminated for some reason, because I'm just not good with keeping track of it. I don't know. But I eliminated some that were duplicates, some that I knew I had already done, and weeded it all down. And so now with everything I've added in, I'm up to 140. So we're doing well. We can use more. We definitely need more. But we got enough to get us by for a couple episodes or so here. And, first number is 75. And 75 comes from, it's from Ronster. And Ron says, what is the most downloaded podcast of Nerd Pride Radio? It's early ones are more downloaded than later ones, just because they've been around longer. And last time I checked the numbers, the two most downloaded episodes were, number one was 28, episode 28, called Chips and Dips. And right after that, episode 39, Double Science. I don't know why. I have a theory that in my show notes or in the episode title, Those are episodes, the ones that I see a spike, that they are, obviously, like I say, earlier episodes get more downloads than later episodes, but there are certain episodes that over, you know, the course of a year or so, you will see some episodes that have a little spike, that is raises them a little bit from the ones that are around them. And I think it's always because there's something in the show notes, something in the title of the episode that just catches a search when people are searching for certain topics. It's something that just turns up in various searches. And I don't know how to optimize that, nor do I want to know how to optimize that. I'm just doing my thing. But there's no, for episode 28 and episode 39, I have no idea what makes them special, but those are the ones. 39. Speak of 39. And that comes from Daz. Hey, Daz. Thanks for the new entries. This one says, shouldn't you and Kyle do a reunion episode of the Animal Cast just for old time's sake? Yeah, we absolutely should. You know what? Next time I am together with my brother, we should sit down and just record an hour's worth. But, you know, there's problems with that. The last time I saw my brother, for example, I recorded with his son Gabe, who was awesome on the mic. But Kyle still has to work. Even when we're there on vacation, his job does not allow him a ton of vacation a year. And so, when we have time, it's all the family together, and it's really hard to peel off a couple of hours just for me and Kyle to do a thing. And also, he just lost his house. And so I assume if I go down to visit, he's going to be busy with, rebuilding his life and shit, because he's whiny. So, it is hard to get together. But yeah, you know what? We should. We can record over Skype or something coming up. Just to hang out, just to chit chat. If I come up with a good topic, maybe it's just me and Kyle sitting around doing Podomatics for an episode. I mean, Podomatic comes out of the instant podcast, gig that we did on the Animal Cast. So, it's a thing we're used to. Yeah, we should try it. And that is 62. And I'm not going to do a ton of these because I need to go back to bed and get some more sleep. But 62 is from Kyle. And Kyle says, what kind of car would you like to drive every day? Assuming that price isn't an issue, but also something you're not going to just turn around and sell for the money. Look, my everyday car, how did I not get rid of this one? I would swear this is a duplicate too. Anyway, I suck at this game. My dream car would be a Tesla. I would love to have a Tesla, and it would be my everyday car. It could even do some good round trips if I'm going to, if I go to Omaha, if I go to Lincoln, if I head out in the directions that have the Tesla refilling stations in them, then yeah, I could do that. But it would be a great everyday car because, well, I'm never going to put more than, 100, 150 miles on it in a day just driving locally. And so it would get me around locally, and then I plug it in at night, and it's a perfect car. I would love to have that. Again, assuming price was no object. So, 15. 15 is from, hold on, did I number that one? I did. Okay, good. 15 is from Ronster. And that Ron says, it has been said that perception is reality. But if you change people's perceptions, do you thereby change reality, and is it limited to them? No, you do not change reality, you simply change their perception of reality. So, okay, if you change their perceptions, you're changing reality in as much as the reality is that they now have different perceptions. But in general, perception is not reality. It's just not. There is, I have a very strong belief that there is an objective reality outside of any individual observer. Now, that objective reality does vary from observer to observer in that, when you talk about quantum effects and relativistic effects, and but there is an objective reality that all of those perceptions are based on. That is my That is my very firm belief. So therefore, you can change people's perceptions. It doesn't change what's real. It doesn't. At least not for me. 87. God, I also just, again, laying here sick, and I woke up feeling better, but still like tired and achy and just don't want to get out of bed. And so I knew I had to come out here and record. And I'm like, I don't want to move yet. Oh, God. And so I laid in bed and I watched one episode of Happy on Netflix. If you have not watched Happy, it's Christopher Maloney, who used to be Detective Elliot Stabler from the original SVU, Law and Order SVU. So Christopher Maloney stars as a cop who, well, he's a disgraced cop who is now, I don't know, a drunk and a hired killer and just an all-around bad guy. And he is accompanied by Patton Oswalt, who is a imaginary purple unicorn that only he can see. And there's good reasons for all of this, and it is freaking bizarre. This whole show is freaking bizarre. I don't know what to make of it. It was entertaining as all get out, and I'm going to keep watching it. But there's also some, there's some very weird elements to it. I'll report back later when I've seen more. I don't want to make judgments just yet. So anyway, 87 is from Ronster. It says, assuming you could travel in time, but not location, just like in the book The Time Machine, which direction would you go if it was a one-way trip? Okay, if it's a one-way trip, I would go... Oh, man. More than likely, I would either go... I've got an answer. I'm just trying to figure out how to phrase it. Because there's two potential answers here. One, I go back in time. I find a time when I can do this uninterrupted. And I go back in time 1 hour. All right, no, let's make it 2 hours. I'll go back in time 2 hours. And then I will set up a video, set up my phone to record video of me recording a live podcast with myself. Yeah, how's that? All right, because I don't know what this is gonna produce for me, but A, it'll be an excellent fucking episode of the podcast for sure. Because the me from the future will be constantly knowing what me from the past is going to say already. And me from the past is actually a pretty good predictor of what me from the future is going to say, because it's still me. And so we would talk over each other and we would laugh a lot at our own stupid jokes and people wouldn't get it, but it'd be really entertaining for me. And the video of it, just to have evidence that I traveled in time. And then having done that, now I go back to my life as normal. It's a one-way trip. So, now I go back to my life as normal and I have that evidence for whatever it's worth. All right. Or the other alternative is I go forward in time a few minutes so that I can see that it's actually happened and it's real. But both of these are predicated on the fact that it's a one-way trip. So therefore, whatever trip I take, whether it's a couple hours into the past to hang out with me, for a podcast for a couple hours, or just a few minutes into the future just as a proof of concept, either one doesn't disturb the life that I have now. Because otherwise my one-way trip is going to leave my family without me. All right. It's going to, if I go forward any length of time, it's going to leave my family without me. If I go back any significant length of time, then if I wanted to do this, then I could just look up the lottery numbers from 3 weeks ago and then travel back in time for 3 weeks. Tell myself the numbers to buy to get the ticket, and then I have enough money to put myself into a hotel room in hiding for however long it takes, the 3 weeks, and then my one self goes back to the past to enact all of this, and then my future self gets to stay there, and now I've only lost 3 weeks of aging, and I'm stinking rich, and I can help take care of my family. That's actually probably a better way to go about it. Except, look, if I didn't win the lottery the first time and I go back and I try to give myself a lottery ticket that wins and I'm going to change history, does that? I don't get it. I don't get it. It might be too complicated. You know what? I'm just going to go back and podcast with myself. That's it. This whole winning the lottery thing, I think I'm endangering the fabric of space-time, or everything's going to go horribly, horribly wrong to prevent me from changing the past, and I don't want that. I've seen too many movies. I know what could happen. And 43 is from Phoebe. All right. Phoebe says, what is your favorite thing to cook for breakfast? Pancakes. I love pancakes. Pancakes are tasty. Everybody's happy with them. They're super easy. I mean, you just start cranking out pancakes like nobody's business. And then they come on in, and then they're still hungry. All right, crank out some more pancakes. It's not like they're tough. Ah, so much fun. What is your favorite thing to have other people cook you for breakfast? Look, if I'm going to, this is if I'm going to a restaurant, I want breakfast somewhere that someone is just serving me, I'm going to have Eggs Benedict. That is my favorite, although I like lots of breakfast, so I vary that one up a lot. But I love Eggs Benedict. I think that stuff is awesome. So there you go, for what it's worth. So, and then that's it. So now it is time for GLaDOS to give us a recap of this week's episode so far.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2018 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week was Weezer's In the Garage and Wonderful World by Sam Cooke. All the songs I use are available on iTunes. You check them out, you buy them, you enjoy them, because I'm not putting them in my podcast if I don't love them. If you want to help out Nerd Pride, subscribe to this podcast in iTunes or whatever podcatcher you use, and go to that site and write us a nice review, or any review as long as it's got 5 stars on it, because that's what makes the difference. You want to do something super nice, recommend it to your friends. You're enjoying it, so spread the word. Let other people enjoy this podcast as well, because word of mouth is my bread and butter, people. Don't forget, this podcast is a proud member of the Nerd Pride Network, which is me, the Nerd Pride Radio, and Bicoastal Disorder. Awesome stuff. Quality nerd podcasting from quality nerds. Remember, I'm always looking for you listeners to do my work for me. Don't forget to send me questions and topics for the Podomatic, such as several people did this week. Watch out every week on the forums on Facebook for listener betrayal. And if you have a really interesting nerd fact, as Ronster did this week, about an upcoming episode number, send it to me. Save me all of that grueling research. My contact information, mike@nerdprideradio.com, @nerdprideradio on some social medias. You'll have to look. But honestly, the best way to talk to me is come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. Sign up, send me a message, we will hang out together, we will become best friends in the world. We'll have fun. It's time for listener betrayal. Before I start recording every podcast, I go out to my forums and to Facebook, and I post up, hey guys, I am recording anything that you want to add. Post it right there, and I will read it at the end of the podcast, which is what I'm doing right now. So, to start off, for the hour and 31 minutes that I had it open yesterday, nobody responded to the forums, which is fine. It was later than usual on a Saturday night. I get that. But if I go over to Facebook, here we go. Facebook says, just a second, I gotta find it. Yeah, why am I getting a new notification from, because it's his birthday, that's why I'm getting a, never mind, sorry. Alright, here we go. Facebook. Okay, I posted up on Facebook and said, recording episode 251, tell me a cute story about the youngest member of your family. And the first response is from Sarah Beth, and Sarah Beth says, hi Mike. Hi Sarah Beth. She says, I hope you're back to 100%. I hate when you're sick. Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, I was back to, I would have called it 100%. And then I got this food poisoning, stomach flu, whatever this horrible thing is. But even this is passing pretty quick, and I feel pretty decent. I actually, I just cooked myself a frozen pizza for lunch. a late lunch, and I'm holding it down pretty well, so that's pretty good. Which I know. Why would you eat a crappy frozen pizza for lunch after you've just been sick all night with this stuff? Like, I don't know. I was just craving it. Maybe I'm pregnant. Oh my God. That would be bad. A miracle of science though. So, anyway, back to Sarah Beth. That's the reason we're here. Sarah Beth says, I'm going to assume you mean my Desmond and not my younger brother because there's nothing cute about him. Well, of course not. He's like a full grown adult by now, I assume. And yes, Desmond would be just fine. You can interpret this question however you like. And she says, everything about Desmond is cute. But I'll give you a cute dialogue between him and Evangeline. Otherwise, I'd be typing Desi stories all night. So, this is the, I can't do either of their voices. So you'll have to imagine. But, Evangeline is his very cute older sister who says, I don't know where he gets this stuff from. And then Desmond, with his nose up in the air, says, I am an artist. I assume he says it with that tone of voice. See, that's adorable stuff. All right, and now, after that, it posts done from me, but it says, that was 17 hours ago, and then 18 hours ago, my wife replied. Facebook's been putting my replies out of order. I don't get that. My wife posted up and said, today, Mike needed to run into the store, and while the boys and I waited in the car, Noah asked, hey, Mom, do you want to hear the dirtiest joke that Dad ever told me? Okay, to be fair, he didn't tell it right. So, look, the joke that he was talking about and the joke that he relayed to his mother while I was in the store was, why did Mickey have to break up with Minnie? Because she was fucking goofy. Okay, except he didn't say fucking because he's 12. And so... she said, he's telling his mom this joke and says, why did Mickey have to break up with Minnie? Well, because she was effing goofy. And then he says, but you know what I mean by effing, right? Yes, I know what you mean by effing. So, adorable. So, that's, look, when your youngest is 12, that's what a cute story is like. Although, actually, to be fair, yesterday, he also wound up, we bought decorations for our cat tree because, again, this year we're not going to decorate a whole Christmas tree. We're just going to decorate the cat tree. And so we got some jingle bells and some cat toys and some Christmas decorations and all sorts of stuff to put over the cat tree, which our cat tree is 6 foot tall. So, I mean, it's this huge thing. And so it will take decorations very well. And we were showing the kids, and Noah saw the jingle bells that were in the package. And he was just inspired. He's like, no, I was watching this video on making cat toys. And he's like, I could do this. He says, if I can borrow some of those jingle bells, and borrow, if you can have some of those jingle bells. So, all right, fine. You know, we've got all the materials. So we got pipe cleaners and some old socks and the jingle bells. And we got some firmer plastic stuff that would crinkle really well. We got some catnip. We got, like, except for the catnip. We had to buy the catnip at the store. Everything else is stuff we had just laying around. And he set about making cat toys for the afternoon. And they're awesome. Like, he wants to give them to the cats right away and see how they work. But I'm thinking we need to save them for Christmas. I mean, these would be great Christmas gifts because he can give a couple of them to his brother Jacob for Jacob's cat, Godot. And then a couple of them for our cats. And so he has the two variations are of his cat crawlies, as it were. Is he has standard mice where he can ties them off with tails and whiskers and stuffs them with jingly, crinkly stuff. But then the other one he does like bugs that he had set up. And the bugs are just adorable. He has a one-eyed ant that is just my favorite. He's going to give that one to his brother, which, damn it, I wanted that one so bad. But it was really cool. He made cat toys all day. And I'm excited about seeing how they work out because we have more than enough old socks. Like this was just a pair of, speaking of Goofy, this was a pair of very old Goofy socks that literally have Disney's Goofy on them, in a golf outfit. And no one ever wears these anymore. I don't even know that anyone ever wore them, but they're some novelty socks. And so he cut those in half and he tied them off and did all sorts of stuff with them. But, you know, I have a bucket downstairs that is just with old clothes, and I have so many old toddler socks in there, socks that Noah has outgrown now, so nobody can fit in, but we just haven't gotten them to Goodwill yet. So, you know, stuff that it's all stretched out and ruined for the most part anyway, but there's a lot of socks down there. It's like, wow, he could be making cat toys forever if he's really enjoying that. He's got some good ideas. He wants to try different stuff now. So those are our cute Noah stories. And then that's it. That's all we've got. So I appreciate you guys stopping by, even though I'm sick. Although I'm getting over it. This is a different sick than last time. I got over that one. I'll get over this one. We're fine. Love you guys. You're awesome. I'll talk to you next week. Bye.